Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 66, Physiology, Part 5. Now we'll look at the so-called rhythmic system, the system of the circulation of the blood, our breathing, so it's the circulatory, respiratory part of our nature, and the heart and lungs figure as the all-important organs here. Now, let me begin by alluding to something I mentioned earlier, which is this issue of the heart as a pump or not. I've testified as an expert witness in a number of very sad and almost tragic cases where parents were getting divorced, there was a custody battle or a support battle, and one parent, usually the estranged father, though also once the estranged mother, decided that the best way of getting back at her former spouse or his former spouse was to pull the child out of a Waldorf school, you know, because they knew how much that meant to the other parent, not because they really cared about the education one way or the other. So anyway, they claim that the child going to a Waldorf school is being deprived by not being able to be exposed to the healthy effects of media, among other things, and being taught by weird cultic teachers, you know, who undoubtedly drool at the mouth, whatever. So I was there to represent those teachers. And I, you know, every time, it was like clockwork. Hardly had the questioning begun. And, you know, when you're an expert witness, those lawyers are so nasty. They want you to look like a complete jerk and lose your credibility before the judge. And I know perfectly well it doesn't take that much. It doesn't really require that clever a lawyer to make me look like a jerk. So, of course, I'm terrified up there. And the first question I get is, do you plant by the moon? To which I answer, no, I only do gardening work when the sun is shining. Second question, do you believe that the heart is not a pump? Or usually, do you teach children that the heart is not a pump? Or do Waldorf schools teach children that the heart is not a pump? This was so predictable that I'd be asked this. And this is huge, you know, and somehow the lawyers go online, they look in Dan Dugan's site or whatever, and they always come with this question. This is like, you know, in another setting saying, do you not believe in God? Or are you against the American flag? It's that kind of question that they know if you answer this question affirmatively, that the judge will just ignore you, you know, just get rid of you. So anyway, what do you do? How do you answer that? So what I would do would be to say, if it pleases the court, I got that from watching, you know, television trials. If it pleases the court, I would like to present an image drawn by a student that I taught about the heart. So I evade the question. And the judges always say yes. They're kind of curious themselves. And then I show one of the pictures from a physiology book. You see it on the slideshow. Something along that nature that looks just like a heart, you know, and it has everything identified, the valves and the veins, the arteries, whatever. And I say, this is the work of my students. This is how I teach them about the heart. And it's just kind of such a surprise that I would show something instead of just giving the answer. The lawyers kind of always forget what they ask me and why they ask me that question. And the judge will usually say, how old is the child who did that? I'll say, you know, they're just seventh graders, 13 or so. And how many of these schools are there? They always want their grandchildren to go after they see that work. So anyway, be prepared, okay? Because you probably, if it's seventh grade, you may have families getting divorced right and left. And who knows, you may have to go and speak representing the school And they'll ask you if the heart is a pump or not, and if you plant by the moon. So let me talk to you a moment about the heart and a pump. There's a very interesting article a number of years ago in a very obscure journal, at least in the English language. In Germany, it was read by many people. In America, it was printed in a little journal called Mercury, which was the Journal of the Anthroposophical Therapy and Hygiene Association in Chestnut Ridge, New York. And I was an editor of that publication. And we printed an article by a man named, I think it was Giesbert Husemann, who comes from a family of anthroposophical doctors and scientists. And it was about the hydraulic ram, something I am sure you have never heard of. The hydraulic ram is a device. It's used in the United States. It used to be, anyway, quite a bit. It's still used quite a bit in Europe. It is a device that is, it has no machinery whatsoever. It has mechanical processes going on, I should say. It is a machine, but it has no power source. And what it does, it's placed in a stream. The water has to be moving pretty quickly. And the flow of the water through this ram, the ram is so engineered that the flow of the water then goes through a very narrow aperture. And of course, this creates much greater water pressure. Such pressure, in fact, that it creates a kind of pulsing, and on the positive forward pulse, it spews up water like 10 or 20 feet in the air, much to the delight of the farmer whose farm is on a hillside overlooking the stream. That is to say, it's a way of bringing water upstream, whereas most irrigation, you're working with water on the same level or water that's a bit higher than your farm. And it's a device that's been in existence for a long time. I think it was developed round about the time of the 18th century or something like that. And Steiner had said that the hydraulic ram was the best image that we have in the outer world of what the heart is and how the heart works. That the hydraulic ram is not a pump. There's no pumping activity going on from the ram itself. It's not using electrical power. It's not using animal power. It's the sheer force of the water, the pulsing that's inherent in water when it meets any kind of obstacle. And it's good if you take your children to see a stream before you talk about the heart. I'll say more about this later. But anyway, that kind of enhancement, that channeling of the natural pulsing quality of water, which is not static but is a dynamic substance, that allows the pressure to so increase that the water, you'd look at it without knowing what that device is, and you'd say it's being pumped up. Wow, what a powerful pump you've got there. But you don't hear any pumping going on. Now, when I was teaching seventh grade the first time, Fisher Scientific sold a glass model of a hydraulic ram, a perfectly workable device. And you could put it in a stream, or you could run it under a faucet. There were different ways of working with it, or hook up a hose to it, whatever. And it was glass. You'd see through it, and you would watch the course of the water. It sort of runs it through a little bit of a labyrinth, and all of this then tends to tremendously heighten the pressure. So I could show this to my class when we were learning hydraulics and physics, and then bring it up again, and we'd look at it again when we were talking about the heart. The school, it was, you know, pretty expensive. We had an OSNA grant at that time, and I was able to get it. Now, you know what it is. You're teaching science in the upper grades, and you're not a science teacher. You don't have your own laboratory. You're sharing the equipment. So next year, my colleague who was leaving sixth grade, going into seventh grade, got this, and I talked to him about it, and we worked on it together. He loved it. He used it. Terrific. The year after that, I made sure to talk about to the new seventh grade teacher, and in the spring about what was going on and everything. Then I went on sabbatical. I was done with eighth grade. I came back, and the hydraulic ram was broken. And, you know, you're going to have this experience when you do laboratory science in the grade school. Nobody feels responsible for the equipment. Test tubes don't get washed, and physics equipment goes missing or whatever. It reached a point where in Green Meadow, we would actually go on bended knee to the high school teachers and ask the physics teacher and the chemistry teacher to lend us equipment. And thank goodness they were really nice about it. But everybody got a very stern lecture from them because they just knew, don't trust these class teachers. They don't have any respect for scientific equipment. So think about that, folks. But anyway, okay, I went back to the Fisher catalog. I'm going to buy one myself. It's going to be mine, and I will lend it to people. Not there. I have not since that time seen a hydraulic ram advertised as a piece of scientific equipment. I saw one other for sale in a farmer's catalog, and I'm sure, you know, you still could get it, maybe. Maybe the Amish use it. And it was $2,000 or something like that. It was heavy duty and meant for lifetime of work. So anyway, if you can get hold of one of those somehow or other, maybe you live in a rural district, maybe there's an organic farmer who's got wind of one of these things and is using them, look for it. I have never Googled it, which I should, and you might want to do that. So this is very interesting because this is what Steiner said about the heart. It appears to be pumping, but the movement, the circulation of the blood is coming in and out of the blood itself. Now, of course, by, you know, all measures, scientists who even know what Steiner said about the heart just completely ridicule this because it smacks of the theories of the blood that come to us from Galen in ancient Greece and were perpetuated not only through the Middle Ages, but all the way into the Renaissance. Harvey is post-Renaissance with his theory of the circulation of the blood. The idea that the blood moved in a tidal way through the body, that it was like a tide. The water or the substance, the blood, was pulled back into the heart, and then it expanded again. Then it was pulled back, and then it expanded. Now, Harvey was able to affect observation of the heart because of a man who had a chest wound that opened up his chest. He was perfectly okay. Just bandage there, so Harvey could watch it, and he realized there is no way that the amount of blood that is forging through the body can possibly be replenished, freshened up in the heart, and then pushed out through the whole body like a tide, and then come back, and he could just see something else was going on, and he noticed in the blood vessels, he noticed in all of these wonderful little tubes coming out of the heart, he saw movement there. In fact, it was a pulsing kind of movement, and he realized there is a pulsating, rhythmical movement here, and it is like a pump. Now, we have to think about this. in Galen's day in ancient Greece, there was no such device as a pump. In the Renaissance, the kind of pumps that worked, you know, were relatively primitive. And this is what happens in the way in which we look at the human body. We invent something or perfect something mechanical, and then we say, oh yes, and of course, all along, the human organism's been working this way. You know, what do kids say today? Wow, your brain is like a computer, you know, or we say, the brain is hardwired to, or we say, the neurons fire, you know, it's like light bulbs going off repeatedly. It's like circuits being turned on and off. And we are being not anthropomorphic, but mechanicomorphic here. We're inventing something, we're developing something technologically, and then we're saying, and of course, all along, that's how the body's been working, but people in the past were too ignorant to perceive this. So as pumps got developed, and especially pumps that could be powered by steam, let's say, because the first use of the steam engine was not to power a moving device, but rather to pump water out of coal mines, then the idea became easily the coin of the realm. And King Charles II himself accepted this, that the circulation of the blood was the accurate way of looking at it. So Steiner does not deny the circulation, and he does not deny that the muscular movement of the heart is connected with that circulation, only he's saying it is it's on the receiving end. So why does the blood pass through the heart anyway? Why is the heart needed? And what Steiner brings is that the heart actually creates a vacuum. It's the only place in our body, the only place in nature, we might say, without it being forced, where a vacuum, or he says negative space, good for algebra this year, negative space is created. And when the blood passes through that, it is not just a matter of oxygen, the blood being oxygenated, but rather the blood is being etherealized. It is being given at every moment impulses directly from the realm of life, from the etheric body. This is where the etheric body interfaces with us in the deepest and most vital way. So, of course, the blood then will be oxygenated because oxygen is the gas which is the signature of the etheric body. That's why we need it to stay alive, and that's why water tastes better when there's oxygen in it, and so on. And a waterfall is affecting the oxygen content of the air around it, and we feel fresh, refreshed when we're near it. So this is what the heart is doing. It is the great refresher. It is the great giver of life and bringer of life, but not because it is pumping the blood, but rather because it is receiving the blood. And for a split second, it is taking that blood out of the physical world and rendering it etheric, and then returning it very, very quickly. And this is why the heart is ceaselessly working, but its work is in response to that which is around it. So this is why Steiner would say that, you know, the heart is the organ of balance. The heart is the organ that is sort of the highest, that the etheric and the astral, which is responsible for movement in our body, the etheric receives the blood when it's been moved, but it's the astral body which is moving the blood. And this is why the child in seventh grade, eighth grade, actually is starting to develop a completely new heart. The coming of the astral body requires an organ that was very different from the heart that the child carried for the earlier part of their life. And part of what we are doing, a big part, a bigger part than we realize, and then is described probably in your teacher training or by your mentor. But I'll tell you, the big part of what the heart is that we are doing as Waldorf teachers is we are getting the child ready to receive the heart. In the same way that Steiner would say that the whole mission of the Israelites was to purify the blood of the Israelites so that the Jesus children could be born. And that the genealogy that Michelangelo is so fascinated by is a process which is not unlike the purifying of the blood via the heart. And we as Waldorf teachers are like the Israelites. We are getting the children ready so that they can receive their new heart when they come into the years of puberty and adolescence. So this is a great time to be studying the heart. And this is why I feel, again, that one should not err too much on the side of health and hygiene, you know, and how to keep your hair brushed and things like that, which are very important. But definitely you want to bring the children into the world of these organs because they are forming, reforming, and wonderful, tremendous things are happening, and you want them to awaken a little bit to that. This is also an age where a murmur of the heart, arrhythmia, even something like a little heart attack can occur more often with boys, but with girls as well, that children can be prone to problems and issues with their heart. Usually, the physician won't look in that direction, so other things will be diagnosed. But the heart is in a very tender state here, and it's not surprising that this is like the golden age of puppy love. I don't even know if people use that term anymore, of the crush. I'm sure that there are other terms used in social networking with which I'm not the least bit familiar. But this is where children start to awaken. They're really awakening in their heart. And Sigmund Freud got it all wrong and said they're awakening in their reproductive organs. And actually, a lot that's going on there is in a complete state of sleep, even deeper than what's going on in their digestive system. But the heart is really what they are coming into. And out of this, they are starting to experience love in a new way, not just love for their parents, not just love for their teacher, not just love for their best friend in the world, but love that has to do with gender differences in gender, or nowadays maybe similarity in gender, but either way, it's another experience altogether. We'll talk more about the rhythmic system next.